Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning to you, Father Matthew Spencer, sitting in for Patrick Madrid. Back to be with you today, and what a pleasure it is. I hope you're doing well, and I'm so glad that you tuned in to Relevant Radio today, and you're joining us for the conversation. Patrick's doing just fine. As you probably know, he was scheduled to go on a cruise this week, which got bumped to later this year. And I had already been booked to cover for him. And we said, hey, Patrick, get some R&R anyway. And of course, I'm very happy to be with you. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. 888-914-9149. We'll certainly get to the phones very soon and give you a little time to get warmed up with your questions and your insights. I thought I'd start today by talking about a topic that's very dear to my heart, probably very dear to your hearts too, because although I'm not a parent, I know that for parents, one of the very important and decisions that takes a long time to make is how to choose or what to name your child. And what a privilege that must be for all of you who are called to be mothers and fathers to settle on a name for your child. And probably what a very difficult decision that is too. And maybe sometimes it's easy. Maybe there's a tradition in your family to name your firstborn after your father or your grandfather or something like that. I was reading yesterday, Cyrus, about an individual, a woman who was named Jeffrey, because the tradition in their family was the firstborn son was always named Jeffrey.
Oh,
but
no. It's like a boy named Sue.
Can you imagine? Yeah, I mean, that's rough. And here I am as a priest getting to see the whole diversity of names that people give to their kids. I think especially in today's age, Cyrus, people are naming their children more creatively. Is that a diplomatic way to say it?
The spelling, like, it could be a normal name, but the spelling is really wacky.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, people like creative spellings. I think now with the internet, now that people's names are we see more a broader spectrum of names out there, I think parents tend to be maybe thinking outside of the box more, and they hear a name they like that might not have any connection to their family, and they say, oh, that's a nice name. I think I'm going to use that. I think people go online and they find lists and lists and lists of names.
Oh, yeah. Favorite TV show. Oh, I like this character.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah.
I've seen that with, remember Game of Thrones was a big deal, a real big deal, and a lot of people name their child Khaleesi, who was one of the main women. She was like, and she's
are
like,
you serious? Are you being serious?
I'm being
now,
absolutely
Cyrus?
Serious. Yeah. And what blew me away is, so they're naming their kids Khaleesi, and then it ended up that she's the big bad in the show. And so all these people are upset because
what?
They thought she was the hero, but she ended up being the bad guy.
Oh,
now,
wow.
Spoiler alert.
That's got to be embarrassing for your child.
Yeah, it's like, don't name your kid after a TV show.
Yeah. It really hit me. I wasn't aware of that, Cyrus. That's a little unsettling for me. People name their children after a person whose whole narrative arc they still don't know yet.
Yeah, exactly.
I started to see this, when I was ordained a deacon. This was in 2008, and I started baptizing children. And, you know, for the most part, the names that were given were Christian names or at least common names. But more and more, I started to see names that I didn't even know how to pronounce them, Cyrus. I would look and looked like a jumble of letters to me. And I'm thinking, how is this supposed to be said? And how am I supposed to baptize this child? And I'd have to have a conversation with the parents. And, I'm not an old curmudgeon yet, Cyrus. I'm really not. Sometimes
Get
I might come across.
Yeah,
that's sometimes how I feel. I think it's important, the naming of our children. It's important for a variety of reasons. On the one hand, as Christians, we know the importance of a name. I mean, we know the meaning of all the names down through biblical history, especially the name of Jesus, the Lord saves. That's such an important name. So important, in fact, that we have a feast day in the Catholic Church for that. Mary's name, so important that we have a special feast day dedicated to just the name of Mary. And these names connect us to a tradition and a past that is rooted in grace and rooted in meaning. And I think that's important to connect to. I'm not against, Cyrus. I'm not against new names. I mean, the only reason we have St. Matthew, for example, is because he had that name before there was a St. Matthew. So obviously, I feel an affinity to the Apostle Matthew, and I'm grateful for that name. It has a lot of rich apostolic connection.
Is that where you got your name from? Is that why your parents named you?
Oh,
Matthew?
Should I tell the story
I'm
of
interested.
How I got named?
Yeah.
I think I will. I've told this story before. It's not like a secret, but some people blush when they hear it, and my mom especially blushes when she hears me telling this story. So I never thought about my name until I had graduated college. I was thinking about a priestly vocation, and I started to realize that a lot of my friends, or at least some of my friends, their names they received because they happened to be born on the saint's feast day, right? So a friend of mine, his name is John. His parents deliberately picked his name because he was born on the feast of Saint John the Evangelist. And this is a common tradition, especially in certain cultures, that people choose the name based on the saint day in which they're born. So I didn't even know at that point, Cyrus, I think I was 22 or 23. I didn't even know the feast day of Saint Matthew. It happens to be September 21st, but I didn't know it at the time. And I looked and my birthday wasn't even close to that. And I thought, well, okay, so it couldn't be that I'm born on the Feast of St. Matthew. But what I did notice is that it was almost to the day, 3 months after my birthday, the Feast of St. Matthew. And I was looking at that going, oh, I definitely wasn't born on that day, but maybe they decided. And then I started like doing the math in my head, and almost, that meme of like somebody with equations going by their head, thinking about, all these connections. That was me until I realized, oh, wait a second. The Feast of St. Matthew isn't 3 months after my birthday. It's 9 months before my birthday. Is that TMI? Is that too much information?
No, but suddenly why your mother blushes makes way
now
more
it makes
sense now.
Yeah. I love that, and what's funny is I deduced this myself, right? I figured this out without talking to my parents. For some reason, I could have just asked my parents, and they probably wouldn't have given me a straight answer at that point. But I figured it out myself, and then I went to my parents. I said, this can't be just a coincidence, right? And my mom, blushing a little, said, no, you were conceived on the Feast of St. Matthew, And I've always appreciated that. I feel that's a neat connection and a beautiful connection. Especially my parents have a great respect for life and the awareness that human life doesn't begin at birth; it begins at conception. And so from that day, Cyrus, that's when I really started to appreciate the name of Matthew all the more. And I started to have a devotion to St. Matthew. So
that is really cool.
Isn't that cool?
That's way cooler than my story.
Yeah. Well, if you don't mind me asking, where did you get the name Cyrus?
I'm the only person the only male in my family not named Rick.
Oh.
So I asked my mom, and she said she had a book of names, and every day she would just open it up and point to a name. And so I'm named Cyrus completely, very random.
Yeah, well.
No meaning.
through the inspiration of God in your mom's
That
your
sounds
mom's
so
mind,
much better
right?
than yeah, what it's I just
divine
said.
Providence.
I like that.
Just totally
Let's go
random.
With that. Let's go with that.
No purpose whatsoever. Right. Just eeny, meeny, miny, mo. And here we go. So here's what I've been thinking about, Cyrus. I understand, and obviously not everybody's going to have the same story that maybe my parents had with my name. There are negative ramifications psychologically when you name your child something odd. I should not use the pejorative word odd. When you name your child something out of the ordinary, there have been psychological studies on this over the years, the effects of unique names on children. And by and large, they're negative, those effects. Why? Well, because people get teased at younger ages when their names are rather different. I'm not saying that's okay. We need to defend our children from bullying and the effects of the meanness of kids. But this is just, unfortunately, how human social interactions work. When we encounter something different from what we're used to, then we tend to have a negative response to it. There have been many different psychological studies, and some of them I was brushing up on in preparation for this morning's show, about the negative effects of naming your child something different, something creative, something outside of the social norms. And again, I'm not saying that ultimately will lead to your child having terrible psychological problems later in life. Obviously, some really beautiful, creative names have led to some very creative, interesting minds and people who are very well-balanced. But here's what I've been thinking about. There's more importance to a name than just whether people like it or not. There's more importance to a name than whether you're more creative than your neighbor. I'm thinking about all those parents who are picking out names these days, wanting to be more creative than you know, Joe and Jane Smith down the block, and they want to do something a little unique, have their child stand out, and maybe forget to have that connection to our Christian tradition. I don't want to make this point too strongly. It's mostly just something I was thinking about because of a few baptisms that I did recently. And because of, well, the fact that here we are talking about names and the importance of that. And maybe you, our listeners, have seen this yourself. Maybe you have a name that's rather unique and you struggle with it. Maybe you have a name that's really unique and actually it benefited you because you stood out from the crowd because you got noticed with your resume more. Maybe you, too, have seen the power of naming your children with a particular patron saint. And the reminder that indicates for all of us, I think there's a beautiful part of our Christian tradition that says we name our children in connection with our Christian tradition because it supports the faith, because it supports the values that we embrace. I think it's also why when confirmation comes around, there's this beautiful tradition that we have of taking on a patron saint's name. So maybe even later in life, maybe you have a saint's name. Is there a Saint Cyrus? There's a Saint Cyril. We'll need to look into that, Cyrus.
I don't know.
You should know that.
Yeah.
We'll look into that. Yeah, it's quite possible. There are many, many, many saints that are not too popular, but that certainly are interceding for us. I think even if we aren't named after a saint, one of the beauties of the traditional things at confirmation is that we embrace a saint's name that maybe we otherwise wouldn't look to. And in a very intentional way, we say, well, I'm going to pattern my life after this saint. It's not an essential part of the sacrament of confirmation. In fact, I think it's a North American tradition more than anything, because I haven't seen that same tradition in other parts of the world. But regardless, I think there's a beautiful lesson there that we have, a beautiful practice that we embrace. So don't fear, don't worry. If you don't have a Christian name, it doesn't mean you don't have a good foundation or a good connection. It doesn't mean that you're abandoned or lost. But I do think there's something to be said for us in following the names that God has laid out for us. I think the other thing that I find really, really powerful and meaningful is that names can have meaning, is that names aren't just beautiful sounds that come out of our mouths. They sometimes are that too. But especially in Scripture, we see so many names that have that are rooted in meaning, in their connection to God, in the connection to the purpose of the life of the individual. As I mentioned, the name of Jesus means, of course, the Lord saves. The name Matthew means gift of God. The names in Scripture are rooted in the particular meaning that they have. And there's, to me, something very powerful to be said about that. So even if you don't pick a Christian name for your child, make sure you're thinking about what meaning that name will convey. As Cyrus pointed out, you're on a little shaky ground if you name your child after a character from a television show who turns out to be the antagonist and nemesis of... I still can't believe that, Cyrus. That's incredible. But
yeah, people were not happy.
Well, I can't. I really don't think you can blame the show creators or the author of the books for that. I think if you're naming your child and you don't know what's up with that person, then anyway, I'm not going to cast judgment here on those parents, you know. But okay, we'll take a quick time out. What a pleasure to be with you this morning. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. My name's Father Matthew Spencer. I'm happy to be sitting in for Patrick. I'm the provincial of the Oblates of St. Joseph. And if you want to join the conversation, you're most welcome. I'll be back after this.
I don't blame him because he run and hid, but the meanest thing that he ever did was before he left, he went and named me Sue. Well, he must have thought that it was...
Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. It's Father Matthew Spencer, Provincial of the Oblates of St. Joseph. Blessed and happy to be with you this morning, coming to you out of Santa Cruz, California. It's beautiful here today, thanks be to God. I'm right on the ocean, right at the shrine of St. Joseph. I hope someday you can come visit us here at the shrine. Although the year of St. Joseph is over, our devotion, of course, doesn't end, and we always need to turn to St. Joseph, don't we, for some aid and help in navigating the rough waters of this world. So you're always welcome. Hope someday you can get out to Santa Cruz, California, and visit us. I will turn to the phones. It does seem like we have some callers tuning in and joining the conversation. 888-914-9149. Just real quick before we jump to the phones, I think the acquisition that was announced yesterday, Microsoft is purchasing Activision Blizzard. Now, maybe that means nothing to you. Activision Blizzard is a game company. They make computer and console games. They're a very large company. The acquisition is for nearly $70 billion. Microsoft is paying that much money for this company that produces games. That might make you scratch your head and say, how in the world does that make business sense? Until you step back and look at how large the computer and console game industry is. It is wild. It is, to me, it is amazing how much money is spent on producing these huge games, on hanging on to users by having content you have to purchase afterwards, and then by creating communities around them. And I think this acquisition that was announced yesterday is just a reminder of part of our culture is that games are a big part of people's lives. And I think this underscores the fact that whether you play computer games or not, and I suspect my skills of deduction indicate to me that probably not many here are out there playing these, listening right now are playing these huge, you know, games that a lot of times are immoral and maybe consume a lot of your time. But how many of us will stop and play a little game on our phone? We'll see a few advertisements and unwittingly or unaware, unthinkingly anyway, will be contributing to companies who are picking up all this ad revenue. It's interesting to me, and I don't have a huge conversation I want to open on it because I'm not an expert on computer games or consoles like the Xbox or the PlayStation. I think it is kind of amazing how Microsoft started to pivot a few years ago from being a home computer software company, also a business software company, but then with their creation of the Xbox some years back, people were looking, going, what are they doing? They're starting to compete with the PlayStation, with Nintendo consoles, and they've just shown over the years how profitable this industry is. They have a complete vertical integration of this market where they have the hardware. Now they're producing the games. They bought, of course, Bungie many years back. They bought Activision, or they're buying Activision Blizzard now. I think my point is that if this is such a huge part of people's lives, the church has to somehow also be able to speak on that, to enter into it. We have to be aware of it. I think it always takes a while for the church. We move slowly. So maybe when media starts coming out, we think, well, podcasts, who's going to listen to those? Why should we ever produce podcasts? And then before you know it, everybody's listening to podcasts on their iPod and later on their phone, on their iPhones, and the church sometimes slow to get into these things. Same with video production. Here at Relevant Radio, of course, we try to stay on top of these productions and sharing the gospel in new and creative ways. And I think this large acquisition is a reminder of that. It's also, in my opinion, an important reminder of the moral responsibilities that these companies have. You might have heard that this same company, Activision Blizzard, two weeks ago, maybe it was in the last few months, they've been battling this internal crisis. Well, actually, this has been going on for years, but it only came to light in recent months. A culture of, well, what they're calling a frat boy culture inside of the company. A lot of sexual harassment of women who live there. I'm sorry, who work there. A lot of poor management, unprofessional activities alleged to be happening there. And by this acquisition, Microsoft saying, okay, I guess we're taking on that responsibility too. Anyway, kind of curious to me. I don't want to belabor the point, but my as I saw this yesterday, I was just pondering where the world is going. We see these social media companies now trying to become larger lifestyle experience companies. Facebook becomes Meta, wanting to get at every aspect of your life through partly VR, but later through a lot of other integrations that are going to become more and more insidious. And the church, we have to stay on top of it, don't we? Okay, I'll get off my soapbox here. Why don't we go to David, who's calling from Reno. Hi, David. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show.
Hey, Father Spencer.
Morning.
I'm calling about the Trinity, where the use of calling the Trinity is three persons. Mm-hmm. And I've read the Frank Sheed explanation, and mm-hmm. one of his explanations is very complex about the nature of things. But he also mentioned that it could also just be the three parts of God without using the word persons. Or because of anthropomorphism, we tend to make things human that aren't human. And the word persons does mean people these days, as opposed to what it may have been in the past. I wanted to get your take on that.
Sure. Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, David. So let me first off say, Frank Sheed, of course, is a fantastic author. Theology for Beginners is a great book, and many others, I'm sure. But I'm not recalling now his explanation on the Trinity that you might be referring to. So rather than speak, and by the way, I think Patrick himself knows Sheed pretty well, and maybe it'd be worth picking Patrick's brain, you know, when he's back in the studio on this question. But I can speak to a few of your points. First of all, St. Thomas Aquinas would say that everything that we say about God is done by analogy, right? So when we call God Father, that's how he revealed himself to us, of course, but we understand that by an analogy. We understand that by what we know to be a father. Jesus is the Son of God, and that's certainly true. There's a deep truth to that, but the way we understand it is limited. It's limited by our understanding of sonship. It's limited by our understanding of the Father. So whenever we're speaking of especially these deep, difficult topics, we're using human analogies that work to a certain extent and then stop working after another distance. So whenever we're speaking about the Trinity, we use language that on the one hand has some truth to it, but on the other hand falls far short. And the word person has a deep philosophical history as well. So when we say that the Trinity is three persons in one God, we are using that whole rich history of personhood. And that's important. That goes back to the first centuries of the church when we were trying to figure out, well, the nature of Jesus and what it means to be the Son of God and how he's connected to him. You know well the analogy of Saint Patrick using maybe a three-leaf clover traditionally that as an explanation, but that also it falls short after a certain amount of time. So I think any explanation we're gonna use, David, is just an attempt to get us closer there, and I'm sure Frank Sheed will try to do that, but ultimately we'll have to put down his pen and say I can't take this analogy too far, because then for example, if we say that the persons are parts of God, then somehow we're saying that there is a part of Jesus that is not a part of the Father, and there is some truth to that. Don't get me wrong. There's also some philosophical issues with saying that. So I know I'm kind of circling around the point, David. It's because probably, well, I'm explaining to you why I can't answer it, because it's impossible to get at these mysteries using human language. But we try using what we do know.
Yes, well, I didn't mean that persons was part of God. That wasn't what I meant. But Frank Sheed had mentioned there's three ways to look at the Trinity, besides the nature of things, where Patrick, I had talked to him before, and that's when I went to read Frank Sheed. The persons is only the one, and it has a very complex description concerning the nature of things, but not that people are a part of God. That wasn't the intention. It was three parts of God. It has nothing to do with persons. Frank Sheed said it could just be three parts of God. Simple as that. And then he did mention the anthropomorphism, because I agree with you. We do try to understand things by putting them in a concept that we can relate to. But the persons, you get a lot of eye rolling whenever I talk, excuse me, to people at church. They all roll their eyes and go, yeah, persons, yeah, it's kind of stupid. So it's just,
really, I've never
and
had
then everybody
that.
Everybody moves on.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've never had that reaction from people. I've when I speak about the Trinity and say three persons in one God, I'll get head scratching. You know, well, what does that mean, really? But that's interesting.
But you're also in a higher position than me. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you're in a higher position than me. I'm just another going to church, commoner. And of course, someone in your position, they may tend to not want to roll their eyes.
That's probably true.
Not want to go ahead and say something. So. Anyway, I'm just trying to get an idea of things that make sense, because it just doesn't make sense to hear the three persons. And as someone said, well, if that's true, then we should be able to say in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Person. It either is or it isn't. And
well,
that was the
sure.
word we talked about once.
Yeah. Well, thank you, David. I think you're probably right. People tend to be less... Well, some people tend to be less polemical with their priests. Some people love to challenge their priests a little bit more. But you're probably right. People might not question that coming from their priests. So, thanks. It's a very good question, David. And especially, I think, you know, what you're asking or what you're getting at is not only how do we understand the Trinity, but how do we evangelize people to know what that means more deeply. And we have to speak in ways that they will be able to understand and will be able to grasp ultimately. And I think that's a whole different question, but a good one too. Well, we might know very well what Frank Sheed means or what Thomas Aquinas means or what the church fathers meant when they use the different language that they do. But maybe we need different language to help communicate that to others. So thanks a lot, David. God bless. Thanks for calling in.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
All the best to you. Bye-bye now. Yeah, really, really, really interesting, really challenging, isn't it? It's really challenging to communicate the values of the gospel. And some I find are just people are intuitive. I mean, when people hear that they have to love their neighbor, even though it's hard, even though it's difficult, they get it. They realize, yeah, there's common human decency that's necessary and maybe that can be extrapolated even out to love. And that's not something that they find that goes against their right reason. Other people, other concepts are much more challenging. For example, love your enemies becomes much more difficult to communicate because people think, well, actually, I feel more inclined to be vengeful towards my enemies. I feel more inclined to get retribution on those who hurt me. And the gospel calls us to, on the one hand, affirm some aspects of what we embrace, of what we describe, such as love your neighbor, and then also calls us to deepen our understanding of what God challenges us to do, like to love our enemies. And then we have to communicate this to others, don't we? We have to help others to know what God is asking of us. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Why don't we go to Jane, who's calling from Albuquerque. Hello, Jane. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can, yeah. What's on your mind?
Okay, I just got into this thing about names. And I got to thinking how in Spanish we are so much more flexible with names. Like Jose Maria is a common man's name, right? Jose Maria. You would not think of naming your daughter Anthony, but you would name her Antonia.
Mm-hmm.
Or you wouldn't think of naming a boy Margaret, but you would name him Margarito.
Mm-hmm.
And Joseph, Josefina for girl, and Saint Hilary, he was probably Hilario.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
That was what's on my mind.
Yeah, that's wonderful, Jane. I think it's partly names are cultural, aren't they? I mean, there's a cultural aspect to naming, and what's beautiful in Spanish is, as you say, there's a rich connection to Christian values. So a lot of the people that I serve that maybe they themselves were born in Mexico and Central America and South America. One of the traditions they have, as I mentioned, is to take the name of the saint on which you were born. Sometimes even if you're a male and it's a female saint, you still take that name somehow incorporated into your own name, and people wouldn't bat an eye and think that's strange. And I think there's something beautiful about that. There's a love for the name of Mary in many Latino cultures that, yeah, we're gonna add the name of Mary as the middle name or the second name for this child of ours because we love Mary so much, even if it is a boy. And I think there's something really, really beautiful about that. And I think it reminds us that it's also cultural, and people wouldn't be shocked by that or raise an eyebrow to that. So thanks, Jane. That's a very, very interesting observation and contribution. God bless you.
God bless you.
Thank you. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We have a few people on the line. We'll see if we can get to them when we get back. But if you want to join the conversation, you're most welcome. I'm Father Matthew Spencer, sitting in for Patrick Madrid. I'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
In solidarity with the March for Life, our annual hashtag Fast for Life is coming up this Friday. Tell us how you plan to pray and sacrifice for the unborn at relevantradio.com/fast. Maybe you can't make it to the March for Life or the Walk for Life. Maybe you're not sure how you can support protecting the unborn and making sure that life is protected from every level, every stage. Well, one great opportunity that you have is to join us here at Relevant Radio with our hashtag Fast for Life. In addition, if you sign up now and let us know what your particular fast and sacrifice is, you're going to get a free ebook download called The Choice is Love. It will answer many of your questions that you might have about communicating the values that we embrace as Catholics. I've been reading some of the testimonials of individuals who have been signing up. Cindy from Forest Lake said that she's going to sacrifice breakfast on Friday, only have a small lunch, clean the bathrooms, and dust the house. I like that. That's a very opportune way to offer her time for the work of life, to protect the unborn. Ophelia from North Las Vegas says she'll be fasting and saying super-duper rosary and numerous Divine Mercy chaplets. So hope you can join us in this effort, too, to fast and pray for life. Go to relevantradio.com/fast and sign up and also get your free ebook there. Why don't we go back to the phones? We have Mercedes, who's calling from Philadelphia. Hello, Mercedes. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show.
Hi, Father.
Hi.
Hi. I was born on, it's about my name.
Oh, very good.
I was born on September 24th. My father took my sister to school, and he asked the nuns, what is a good name? They said Mercedes, since I was born on the Feast of Mother of Mercy, September 24th. I'm Polish and Italian. My Polish uncle suggested I be called Francesca.
Mm-hmm.
They settled on Mercedes. But the funny thing is, my father's name was Benjamin, but my name had nothing to do with the Mercedes-Benz car.
Ah, that's great. Yeah, Mercedes, I love that name, and I love it precisely because of what you said. Our Lady of Mercy, Nuestra Señora de Merced, is such a beautiful devotion. Our Lady looks upon us with great tenderness and mercy, and Our Lady wants us to also experience the mercy of God. And every time somebody utters your name, Mercedes, then they should be thinking about the mercy of God. What a blessing. And not about the car company, right?
Right.
That's great. Thanks so much for calling in, Mercedes. Take care.
Thank you. You too.
All the best. God bless you. Yeah, I love that. Speaking of names, why don't we go to Susan, who's calling from Minneapolis. Hello, Susan. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show.
Hello. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Thanks. Thanks for calling in.
Great.
What's on your mind?
Yeah. Well, I have five small kids, and they all have unique names, and that was done on purpose. But the truth is, I feel like growing up, there was always those five kids in my class named Jeff or Ryan or Matt, and they tended to get made fun of almost more so than the kids that had unique names, because it was always Jeff R. and, you know, some way of taking Ryan and making it more creative. And my kids, it could be because they're at a very small Catholic school where bullying just isn't a thing. They really don't experience that, but they've never been bullied for their unique names. And every single one of them has a story behind the name. And some of them, even though they're very unique, have very Catholic origins as well. And so I feel like a lot of those studies, that, you know, they're going to be done based on adults. And I think because of the trend towards the far more unique names being way more common now, I think a lot of the previous trends in psychological injury maybe a little bit more mitigated these days, where it's not as much of a big thing.
Yeah, that's a very interesting observation. I mean, you're right. I think culturally we're becoming more accustomed to hearing unique names, and maybe that's going to change how people perceive that. And maybe you're right. I mean, maybe these studies about unique names are you know, maybe biased in certain ways, and maybe depending on the schools that kids attend and the cultures in which they're growing up, maybe the effects will be different. I do think that sometimes the names that these folks are referring to are not the ones you're talking about. You mentioned your children have unique names, but they have meaning to them, right? And probably connection to some parts of your life or your family or even the faith. I think they're talking in some of these studies about much different unique names. For example, there's a famous woman. She has her own Wikipedia page. Her parents called her Marijuana Pepsi. They gave her the name Marijuana Pepsi. Can you imagine that? And it had these negative effects in her life. It also had some positive effects because now she's relatively famous because of her name. But you're right. I mean, I think there's probably, yeah, I think every study and every psychological study we take with a grain of salt. What I'm very happy to hear is that that you put thought into it, that the names of your children have meaning there. I think unfortunately in our time a lot of people pick names. I want to be careful, Susan. I'm not trying to like make people mad or criticize the names of their children. That's not at all what I'm doing. It's more just that sometimes I think people are picking names for maybe rather superficial reasons rather than some deep meaning and connection. And they don't have to come from the Bible. Like I said, we need some new saints' names, and let's get those children to become saints and then have some new holy names for others to use. So thanks, Susan. Appreciate the observation. God bless you. Take care. Thanks. That's very interesting, and I think very important to remember that your children's names might be unique, but they also likely will have a connection to some part of your life, and maybe you can share that with your children. Maybe they can share that with others in their life, and then people understand their names better. Let's go to Paul, who's calling from Minneapolis. Hello, Paul. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show.
Good morning, Father. I'm calling in response to your caller yesterday who described himself as a Vietnam veteran and married to a woman who's experiencing a lot of hopelessness and helplessness. Mm-hmm. And you were practically stumbling over yourself with the word hope and help in suggesting it. I've been thinking about it for a while, meditating on a book by Charles Peguy that was recommended, I believe, in the book by Pope Emeritus Benedict and Cardinal Serra about, I think, celibacy in the church, and celibacy in the clergy in particular. I think it was in the preface that he recommended the book, The Portico to the Mystery of the Second Virtue by Charles Peguy. And, of course, the second virtue refers to the second of the three, I think it's cardinal virtues of faith,
theological
hope, and
virtues, the theological virtues.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And he describes faith as being like an elderly matron, which sounds perhaps sort of like the profile of the veteran's husband, a wife. And also he describes charity as, I think, sort of a young motherly woman. And then he describes hope at length throughout the book as this wide-eyed, childlike, an embodiment of childlike optimism. And the book is like maybe 150 pages of poems. I think he wrote it around 1911 or so. It got translated into English around 1971, I believe it was published. It's just an excellent reflection on the cycles of life, and especially, I think, Mr. Peguy's experiences in fatherhood, because he's describing a lot of aspects of the hopefulness of having children and how important children are to giving hope to life. And And I just think it's a really beautiful poem, and I think it would be really great for that caller, your veteran, to read it. And I think after he reads it, I think he would see why he should encourage his wife to read it.
Well, thank you, Paul. That's a great idea, and I hope that that caller is listening this morning. I'm not familiar with the book myself, but frankly, anything that Pope Benedict the 16th recommended is great material in my mind. He's one of the most brilliant popes, not to mention most brilliant Christians I've had the pleasure of seeing in my lifetime. So and certainly it's hard. I think the challenge with rediscovering hope is that the temptation to despair eclipses so much of what our heart desires, right? Our heart desires to be hopeful. Our heart desires to see the bright lights shining through the darkness. But it's easy for us to fall into these traps. Not to mention that caller's wife, in my estimation, is dealing with a lot of psychological ramifications of that. And sometimes those need a different approach than faith-based ones, but they go hand in hand, right? I think always the faith-based approach is necessary for us to rediscover the theological virtues, and then we also need sometimes the psychological help there when the depression becomes too strong and too overwhelming. So thanks, Paul. As I said, I hope that listener is still listening this morning, and maybe we'll find some benefit in that particular book too. God bless you. I think we can fit Steve in before we go to the break. Steve's calling from Philadelphia. Hello, Steve. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show.
Good morning, Father. How are you?
I am blessed, thanks. How are you?
I'm blessed as well, thank you.
Great.
Father, as far as the Old Testament, the very difficult parts, for example, God calling Abraham to slaughter Isaac, his only son, and some of the other difficult parts of the Old Testament about slaughtering all of your enemies, can we take them allegorically? I've tried to look up what's the Catholic teaching officially, and I haven't been able to find.
Yeah, this is a great question, Steve, and a big question. But let me see if I can tackle it in a short, succinct way here before we have to take a top of the hour break. Yes, it's certainly okay to read some of the Old Testament as allegory, as some insight into a deeper meaning that might not be literal, but might have some great import for our life. Now, clearly, some of the Old Testament is historical. I mean, clearly, a lot of the Old Testament is a historical account of different events, of genealogies, of kings, of the acts of kings, these kinds of things. But also, there are other parts of the Old Testament, and for that matter, of all of Scripture, that have a different purpose. For example, we have psalms and we have hymns, we have poetry, and these shouldn't be interpreted literally. These should be interpreted by the genre in which the author intended them, in which the Holy Spirit confirmed by inspiring them. Some of the events in the Old Testament, we're not sure if they're historical or if the meaning of them is meant to be more allegorical. And I think especially, Steve, for those maybe challenging passages, when we read the story of the sacrifice of Isaac by his father Abraham, or almost the near sacrifice of Isaac by Abraham, we think, well, how could God ask Abraham to do that? And how could Abraham even consider obeying that commandment? But it's necessary, actually, to read that passage as also a prefigurement of the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross and what the Father desires for you and for me, which is salvation. And he'll go so far for salvation that he'll even be willing to offer up the life of his only begotten Son. And so we read these passages also with, as Christians, we read them with an understanding that there is greater meaning found in them when we look at the life of Jesus Christ. So, yeah, I think, I guess my short answer to you, Steve, is that it's certainly okay to read some of the Old Testament as allegory. Some of it is intended in that way. other passages might actually be historical, but do have very much deeper meaning that we can unpack when we know the fulfillment of those passages by Jesus or in the New Testament. And so I think that's what's amazing about Holy Scripture, right? Is it's so rich. We read it and we're never going to exhaust all the meaning that we see there. There's always going to be more that we can reach from it. So we have just a few seconds left, but does that make sense to you, Steve?
It does, Father. Like Genesis, a lot of Genesis, we can look at that allegorically and try to find the deeper meaning there.
Yeah, absolutely. Genesis was not necessarily written as a historical account, say, of creation, right, or of history. It's not that we discount it and say, oh, none of this happened. It's just that we say, well, that wasn't necessarily the intent of the author. So some of it certainly is historical, and we interpret it that way. But other passages might be lessons for us more. And that's a lot of times the church herself doesn't even make a specific judgment on whether it's only allegorical or whether it's strictly literal. The church herself has often allowed the saints down through the ages to see them and to interpret them in different lenses. And one of the great things, Steve, I think about, please God, you and I will be in heaven someday together looking down not only upon the present day earth, but upon all of history, and we'll be able to glean and separate it all out, right, and say, wow, that did happen, and look at how amazing that is. So I'm Father Matthew Spencer, blessed to be sitting in for Patrick Madrid. We're going to take a quick time out, but I hope you can give us a call. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We'll be back right after this.